We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 18. The purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming Black real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Shout out to our show sponsors, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. You can become a member of their network for free at mintinc-usa.com. You can also follow them on IG at mintinc_USA. A couple quick things before we get into our episode. So I work in HR, and so I deal with employees a lot in onboarding, offboarding, and had a meeting with some staff who were moving on. And, you know, the biggest thing that came up was dissatisfaction around pay. And a lot of times people leave for better opportunities, of course, and more money. And it just dawned on me that business and investing is a must for everyone. You know, investment of some sort is a must, especially in these days, because your income is limited at your job, but in business, it's unlimited. In different type of investments, there's no limit, you know, and that doesn't mean everyone needs to invest in real estate. That doesn't mean everyone needs to have a business, but everyone needs to have a side hustle or some kind of investment to supplement your job income, because there's only so much they're going to do for you. There's only so much they're going to pay you, and there's always a ceiling. So that's just something that dawned on me and I wanted to share with you all. Also, we are now accepting show sponsorship and paid ads on our page. So if you have a product, service, book, course, et cetera, that you think our audience would find valuable, definitely send us a DM, send us an email, and we can talk more about those details. Also, don't forget to leave us a rating and a comment. It'll help us go up in the rankings and reach more people. You can also purchase our merch at gum.co/bread, B-R-E-D. We're also on Twitter. You can follow us at Bread Podcast, B-R-E-D Podcast. Take a moment, follow us there, keep up with us throughout the day. You can also sign up for our email list. You'll receive discounts, additional content, resources, and our newsletter. And the link to that is in our link tree and it'll also be in the show notes. Let's get into it.
Join us for the Black Men Building Wealth Virtual Conference, February 29, 2020, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., featuring Charles Oglesby, Andre Hatchett, Jillian Gordon, Brian Robinson, Brandon Thomas, Oge Madu, Gene Holloman, Lamon Woods, Jay Morrison, Torrance Reed, Byron Sellers, Henry Washington, Brian Thomas, Xavier Miller, Chris Senegal, Jeremy Johnson, and more. Topics covered will include marriage, personal finance, debt paydown strategies, tech and investing, mobile home real estate investing, tax strategies, and more. All proceeds will be donated to the Bless a Black Man Foundation. It's the Black Man Building Wealth Virtual Conference. It's lit.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. I am very excited for this episode today. Here with me, I have Lanisha Stubbs of West City, Inc., based in the Los Angeles, California area. Lanisha, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to talk and share my experience. And if it can help anybody be able to find their place in real estate, then it's all good.
For sure, for sure. So tell us more about who you are and what you do.
Okay. Well, I am a residential and commercial broker in the Los Angeles area. I'm licensed in California, but I do most of my business in Inglewood and West LA marketplace. I've been in this business for over 15 years now. I'm a business owner with my husband. We're a husband and wife team, and we have a team here at the local. We're powered by the local Keller Williams Inglewood office. So they're helping us build our team and continue to build our legacy. We're also principal investors. So we've invested in fix and flip in California as well as other states. So we mostly work with investors, seasoned and new investors. We work a lot with the distressed market as far as pre-foreclosure, probates, people that are inheriting property. We find a nice little niche in that arena of properties. And now we're starting to get into multifamily and apartment buildings. So we're starting to build in that direction as well as working with developers. So we're kind of all over the place as far as asset class is concerned, but we mostly work in creative deal structure is where we find our sweet spot to be able to create win-win situations for all involved.
For sure. Thank you so much for that introduction. And something we like to ask in the beginning of each episode is, what was your childhood like, and what did you see or what didn't you see that shaped your view of building wealth?
So that's a good question. You know, I usually share when I go and speak in events some of the, and it's just part of our culture, some of the things that were passed down to us. Like, we were taught to invest in real estate and just, like, you know, go to college, get a good husband, find some property, buy one house, keep that house and pay it off. And then, you know, hopefully you leave your kids maybe that one house without a bill or a reverse mortgage, or, you know, you're just stuck with that one house forever. And as I started to grow in my knowledge and seek other cultures and how they develop and use real estate to build legacies for their families, I saw it was a completely different mentality on how real estate works. It's really an investment tool. They're not attached to it. They're not personally, won't let go of it. They are happy to move up and use the equity that they've acquired to be able to step up and move up and get bigger and better assets so that they can leave income producing property to their kid, not just a rundown single family home. Which, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And so culturally, I think we were just happy to be homeowners at some point. I mean, before 1970, Black people couldn't buy in Inglewood. So just the mere fact that we had home ownership was exciting for us. But we, at this point, need to take it a step further. And we really need to combine our resources and efforts and knowledge to be able to invest together and build together, because that's the only way we're going to reverse some of the negative statistics as far as home ownership is out there. It's important for us in this day and age to have a piece of the investment, a piece of the real estate, especially in states like California.
For sure. And why real estate? Why did you decide to get in real estate as your career and also as an investor?
Well, my background is accounting. So I worked for the government for a number of years, and I'd sit in my cubicle and I'd look around and I see very, you know, seasoned older professionals, like, just waiting to retire. And I thought to myself, that can never be me. I can never just die at the desk. So I really wanted to do something bigger for myself and allow me to have that freedom of, if I chose to be there, I could. But if I chose to walk away, I still had a means to provide with my family and for my kids. So a friend of mine, straight out of college, he started his brokerage and invited me to learn. And I was so green, I didn't know, but I was like, I'm gonna make this work. So I was my first client, actually. So I got my license and I started investing in duplex in South LA. So I would find a place that needed to be fixed up. I fix up both units, rent one side out and leave the other one vacant for the next owner to use as primary residence. So it not only was fixed up, so it allowed them to get good financing like FHA financing. It also had the rental income from the unit that was rented. So it allowed people to come in and buy them at a higher price. And I did that several times through South LA to build my first amount of capital. Then I went to Atlanta and I started doing lofts and high-end condos, and it was very fun being bi-coastal. You know, I was young, and before I got married, before I had kids, I was just out there doing it. And then the market crashed. And whoa, was that a learning curve, because properties went upside down so fast. I had so many clients that lost so much money in that. And I was fortunate not to necessarily lose, but I had to break even on a few of my investments in Atlanta and I sold them to the tenants because they just started to get too close to being upside down. So you learn, you live, you learn. This is a cyclical market, and you have to be able to grow from that. So if I knew better now, I would have waited until the crash and went out and got all those same units for, you know, 30 cents on the dollar, as opposed to the high-end, high market price that I had bought originally. So when I came back to California, I said, you know what, I have some capital, but I want to start investing not with my own money, but with other people's money. Because that's how I saw the biggest and baddest investors. They don't use their own money. They use other people's money. And they had the strategies of seller financing and creative structures that allowed them to raise capital to then do their investments in real estate. So I started to mimic that model.
That's awesome. Seller financing seems to be something a lot of people are interested in. If you can recall, what was your first seller finance deal like? How did you approach it and ultimately get that one done?
Well, what you want to do is you're basically asking the homeowner if they want to take their equity in monthly payments. So you're structuring the deal so that you're keeping their current financing in place, and you just start paying the mortgage. And you pay the mortgage, and sometimes you even pay a little bit over the mortgage, which allows the homeowner to have that in their pocket. But you're basically not going to the bank to acquire a new loan. You're just taking over the payments of the current standing loan. So you're going to want to ask for a mortgage statement, because you want to see, is a loan in good standing? What's their interest rate? The terms that they have? And so it's people that are in a position where they may lose the home, or they want to, or they like a rental that's been vacant. So when a rental has been vacant, they intended to have income, investment income from it, but it's not making any income for them. And when it sits vacant, a lot of people don't know that their homeowner insurance won't cover any incidentals on the property. There's no vacancy clause in home insurance. So let's say a squatter comes in and a fire starts, you're not covered. The house will burn and it'll sit, because then the insurance won't cover the payments. So you find people that don't realize having an income property or investment property sitting vacant with no income, that's actually harmful for them. It puts them at risk. So you explain that to them, and then you go into stating that, you know, would they want to receive their monthly, their equity and monthly payments? They want to know, how do you structure that? Then you explain, I take over your payment, I give you a little bit over the top, which is your part of the investment, and then you proceed to either fix it up or rent it out, or however you want to structure it. I tend to keep it in their name for at least a year, because it gives them good standing as far as the mortgage is concerned. And then you can decide at that point whether you want to refinance or continue to just rent it out to a tenant.
For sure.
Right. But it's different ways, and people have different methods of doing the seller finance. But I just find it as a very, very helpful way for someone to get into investment property when they don't have the 20% to put down, or they don't have the best credit or income for them to go to like a Wells Fargo and get a bank loan. It just isn't as easy for some people. So it's a creative way to get in there. And once you're in there, you're on title, you're paying the mortgage on time, you're doing that for a year. Now you can start to level up and do some other creative deal structures.
For sure. And I know, you know, having the capital is a big concern for a lot of people. So I'm glad you kind of explained more what seller financing could look like. What are some strategies to find a prospect who could be a owner who could be a good candidate for that kind of deal structure, in your opinion?
Well, you'd be surprised how many properties are free and clear just in Southern California. Wow. There are a significant amount. I would want to say almost 50% of the property out there are sitting free and clear. And it's because baby boomers have either held the property for a long time, mm-hmm. or were held by their parents and they just took it over. You also have people that are out of state. So have a lot of equity in there, but they may be living and working in Texas, and mom's house is out here in California, and they just don't know exactly what to do. It's not in front of their face, so it's not exactly a priority for them, and it's no harm, no foul, because nothing has happened at the property yet. So those are the type of out-of-state owners and owners with high equity that you want to seek out to be able to see if they're interested in this type of structure.
For sure. And are there any like databases that you say are good to look into to figure out that information? Like if it's a out-of-state owner, or, you know, even if, you know, if it's free and clear, is that stuff readily available?
It is. There's a lot of third-party vendors that offer that information. But the source that I like the most is Title. You can find a Title rep that will give you a database breakdown of a particular zip code or neighborhood, asset class, whether it be single family or multifamily. And then they can do more detailed searches for you, which is hasn't sold in the past 20 years, owns it free and clear, you know, inherited the property, not at an arm's length transaction. So they can go into much more detail. It's not for free all the time. When you go to that level of detail, there is an expense, but there is a means for you to do that. And it's not a big investment. And then there's a lot of third parties. So if you just Google, you know, that you're trying to find homeowner leads, I'm telling you, you'll get 10 pages worth of companies that'll offer that information. It's just a matter of finding somebody that has good data on where the current owners are. So that's where you spend the time. Getting the list is one thing. You spend the time, and it's called skip tracing, is where you find the time tracking down where the actual owner is and getting in contact with them so you can have this conversation.
Definitely. And do you find when you connect with owners that this is something that they never even considered? Like the seller plans? Right.
Yeah, a lot of them don't know it. You know, until you actually do a deal successfully and use that strategy, a lot of them don't realize how effective it is. And it's actually for sellers to be able to acquire that income and get something out of the investment they intended on getting.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. So you mentioned that, you know, you're doing, you know, you had some properties in Atlanta, which you sold off to tenants, and then you came back to LA. So can you talk to us about how you kind of grew your rental portfolio from there, just coming back and kind of it's more or less starting over?
Yeah. LA is a very expensive market. And so if you just go and make offers with an agent, it's very hard for you to get an offer accepted above, let's say, an all cash buyer that's sitting next to you that's already done this for a few years and has the capital to just come in and drop a large sum into escrow. So it's hard to compete with them. So what I found is connecting directly with sellers and not going through an agent was the way that I was able to build my portfolio. I also sought properties that were not performing. So for example, we're doing this hunt and we're looking for properties and we're out one day with the family looking for getting popcorn. And we see this huge bush tree in front of this four unit property. And they're all four separate single family units sitting on a piece of property. And the owners were in one unit. The other three units were full of trash and garbage and old cars on the property. It just was a hot mess. And so we were able to find a joint venture partner to come in and remodel and update those other units, make it now income performing, and kept the current owners in place so that they can benefit. They were veterans. They wanted to leave the property to their kids. So we shared in the ownership. So that's something where you have to be able to see the diamond in the rough. It's not going to be pretty. It may not be on the hilltop. It may not have a view, or it may, but it's going to have a green pool. You know, it's going to be something where it's not appealing when you walk in. It's going to gross you out. But if you can see the diamond in the rough and bring in people who are who do have the capital but don't have the time. There are a lot of professionals that doctors, dentists, lawyers, sports figures that their job consumes their time, but they just put their money in the bank and they're making less than 1% on their investment. So if you can find and partner with those type of people where you do the footwork and you manage the project and they provide the capital, well, then you can create some great joint ventures that allow you to make these diamonds in the rough something beautiful and make it a win-win for the current owner, for you, for the investor, for a better return on their capital. So it's all in the deal structure that you win, but you got to do the work. A lot of people stop because they'll hire an agent who's not familiar with working with investors, and then they'll show them properties, they'll make an offer, they'll get outbid, and now they're discouraged. So you can't let that stop you. You have to keep pushing and find a way to go around and get to property before it's on the market. That is where you win.
For sure, for sure. And I know you mentioned when we spoke before, you also have some properties out of California, is that right?
Yes. So there are other markets that aren't as expensive as California, but you don't get as fast appreciation. So if you're investing in California, it's because you understand that you're leveraging for that appreciation. So you're in the path of progress. A lot of things are going on in Inglewood, so it's drawing a lot of attention to Inglewood. So if you're able to find fixtures in Inglewood and hold on to them till the stadium comes, that's a great path of progress. But there's other states that are more affordable to get into, and you have better cash flow. So if you're looking for something to supplement your income now, going to states like Louisiana, Texas, Mississippi, those where you can get a lower price point of entry, you can get in there and buy a single family for $50,000 and get a loan on that and only put 10, 20% down. You can actually get into a property with maybe $10,000. And that seems like a lot more doable for someone on their first investment property than it is to be, 10% of a million or 20% of a million in LA, which is the average properties out here, at least multifamily. So there's other markets that you can explore, but if you choose to go that way, my biggest tip is to find a property manager who is able to assist you and have boots on the ground. Some people go to school out of state. They have a friend or family that can look out for them. Some people, have lived in other states and they know some good or nice spots or growing areas in those states. You want somebody to have boots on the ground is what we call them, so that you're not just going off of a picture online and investing and then you go out there and it's nothing but grass. There's no house. You know, you don't want to get duped because you didn't do your due diligence. There's going to be a time when you're going to need to fly out there and see for yourself what you're investing in. It's just that once you actually do that, you get the process set up, you have a property manager, it's really hands off. You're just really collecting the cash flow and having a good handyman in your phone to be able to make sure things stay, on the up and up.
For sure.
So there's advantages to going out of state, and then there's advantages to being in California. It's just, what strategy are you most comfortable with? Some people like to drive up to their investment and see it. I was that person for a long time. I drive up and I look at it like, that's mine. That's me. Other people are okay with it being far away, as long as someone is there to manage it for them.
For sure. And what was it like for you when you first, when you did your first out-of-state investment? How did you meet whoever helped you? How did you figure out the market you wanted to invest in? For those first few out of state.
The first ones, you want to rely heavily on people that are in that community because they know what's coming up. They know what's being built, where it's being built. So when I went to Atlanta, I went right to Buckhead, which is kind of like their downtown or Hollywood considered for them. And they were building high-end condos, a lot of them, right in a good part of town where people, professionals, were trying to stay. So a lot of my tenants wound up being professionals that worked in the area, and they had a lot of job opportunities in that part of the city. So employment, job growth, major stadium growth, places like Las Vegas right now is good because they have a stadium coming. So you want to be in the path of progress, but to figure out what that is, you're going to need to talk to someone local. So I just interviewed agents and property management companies and asked them, where's the best place to invest? Why would I invest there? What's going on in that part of the city? You know, you're curious as if you're going to relocate there. You're going to ask those same type of questions. What's going on here? What jobs are out here? What do people do? Where are the social events? You know, what brings tourism to this part of the city? And then you start to figure out what's the price point? Where are people moving to? Single family apartments, because the rents are high, or single family because they're relocating their family out here. It's close to the airport. So it's a bunch of different reasons that you'll want to consider, but the people you want to talk to, they have to be local. Local realtors, local property managers. So you have a lay of the land, and then you can decide what part of the city you want to go into.
For sure. For sure. And what states, what other states are you personally invested in addition to California?
Well, I have quite a few around the country, but the one that I am most excited about right now is Jackson, Mississippi. So that's a good place just because of the price point being low and because I have a good property manager out there. So it really depends on the resources and what you have available in those markets, because you can find a good neighborhood and a good market in just about every state in the country.
For sure. For sure. And how about how many units are you up to these days?
Well, quite a few.
That's good.
Quite a few. Yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's really about me building this legacy for my kids and being able to show them that you can build something and profit from the income that allows you to be able to do the things that you want to do in life. So a good friend of mine told me a story about her friend that actually inherited about $10 million a kid once they turned 25 from their dad, who was a developer. And so now she has the opportunity to go to Africa and take pictures because she's a photographer. And then she sells those pictures at her art events for a program that allows photography in schools. So she didn't just take the money and sit on it. She took the money that allowed her to do what she wanted to do, which is to bring photography into inner city schools. Wow. So it's that opportunity that I'm creating, as well as trying to pay for private school and, you know, do all the great things and give my kids an opportunity. So it's so much bigger for me than just the number of units or the goal of, you know, it's really about building something that they can then say, my parents put this in place so that I can live the life that I really choose to live and I don't have to live because I have no other means to do so. So it's bigger than just the doors, and it has to be bigger than the money. Who's ever investing in real estate just for the money, it has to be bigger or it's not going to, you know, it'll be meaningless. It won't, you won't get the joy that you think you need to get from it.
For sure. For sure. And can you talk to us more? I know you mentioned previously using other people's money and raising capital. Can you talk to us more about how you go about it and any tips for someone who is looking to use that strategy to build their portfolio and build up their business?
Absolutely. So my suggestion is to create a model of what you plan to invest. So everybody needs to acquire some type of niche. You can't just be, oh, anything. You know, I have quite a few new investors that'll come to me and say, oh, I just want to invest in something that'll make me some money. Okay, you got to get a little more specific than that. So you need to say, I'm going to invest in single family in this part of the city. They're usually 2-bedroom, 1-bath, and they have a formal dining room. Well, I'm going to convert that dining room and laundry room into a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. So you're changing the footprint, which allows you to increase the after repair value. So that's a specific strategy that investors can come in and play. And so you're building as if you're going to do that tomorrow on paper. You're going to put that together in a beautiful, nice little 4 or 5 page portfolio, and you're going to share that with people who have the capital to invest. So it's clear what your budget is for the rehab, what your budget is for acquisition, what your after repair value is anticipating that it will be, and what you'll need from them, what's the return on their money, and how soon they get it back. Those are the things that they are worried about. How much, how soon, and when will I get it back? That's about it. The rest of it, they don't care. Some of them want to know more details about the contractor and who you're working with, but they're not caring about the nuts and the bolts because they're too busy at their, you know, official high-end executive job to worry about all those little details. They're hiring you because they trust you to do that. And once you do it with one or two people, you now have a track record, and you want them to be able to see that you have done this successfully with Sorry, let me get my charger. You'll see you successfully do this with other people's money so that they say, oh, they can do this with my money. And then what you'll find is once you've done just a couple, one or two of them, those people will make money and then they will come back to you. So now what you've done is you've created almost a personal bank for yourself. And so now what I've done, basically, I have a dentist that I work with, and he gives me a certain amount every year for a return. So by the end of the year, I come back to him with that principal and with the interest. But I have his money for a year. So it allows me to be able to go out and make offers all cash on various properties that I can participate in, either all cash or with finance, but that I can participate in with his money and be able to flip that money and make more money. So then when the split, I get my split, I give him his return, and now we both are able to reinvest. So once you don't need 1,000 people. You need maybe 3 people, 5 people tops that trust you, that know you, that understand that this is what you're capable of doing. You've laid the facts out to them, and they're willing to cut the check for you. And once you've done it and you don't lose their money, you make sure their money is more precious almost than your own. You don't lose that money. You gain it. You triple it for them, or whatever you promised you would do for them. They will come back and do more business with you. So I actually have investors now that call me on a daily saying, where's our next project? Where's our next deal going? Because I did right by their money and their return. I did what I said I was going to do. So first step, put that model together. Be really specific. Find properties on the market and say, if I bought this property at this price, how much would I make? How much could I give an investor to make? You want to get to really break down those numbers and then put that model together in a nice presentation and then share that with the people that have the capital to invest. That's how you get private partners to finance your deals.
For sure. And thank you for that breakdown. Can you tell us more about your company and your business and the services you provide?
Absolutely. So we do sales and consulting. So we help people build a wealth portfolio, and that can be buyers, sellers, or investors. We work mostly with people that have some type of bigger investment goal, and they're working on either building up their units or fixing and flipping. We have quite a few fix and flip clients. But it's anybody that really is interested in investing and building wealth through real estate that we love working with. We're here in Inglewood. We offer the first consultation for free to help you kind of get your investment goals together. And we just love doing stuff in our community and spreading the information and knowledge, because we don't have it in our community. There's a lack of resources for information, especially financial information, in our communities. And so for us, just to, number one, host events and spread the knowledge, and then number two, help them actually acquire those goals, then it's win-win for us. So we work a lot in our community with buyers, sellers, and investors. And I'll extend it to anybody in your community. I'm happy to talk with them. I'm happy to work with them. If they have follow-up questions, they can get in contact with me. I'm happy to sit down or have a phone consultation and talk with them about their investment goals.
For sure. And what's the most satisfying part of what you do with your clients?
It's seeing them win. Because we are just skeptical as people. You know, you get taken advantage of so many times with predatory lending practices and people who are outside the community that are coming in and capitalizing off of, you know, your grandfather's property because you weren't able to fix it up. You know, you get so skeptical of outsiders trying to take advantage of you that you miss opportunities to work with good people who really have good intention that want to see you win. So when I find people that are able to trust the process, trust what we're telling them, they actually win at the end, that is where I find my gratitude, because it's like, see, it's not so bad. It's actually easier than you thought. You know, talking directly to a seller is actually easier than you thought. I'm here for the support. I'm here for the contracts. That's mostly what I do, is contract management, because I want to make sure contractually my clients are covered. And so that's where they get the most advantage of working with me, because I know that contract inside and out. I get those offers accepted 9 times out of 10. So that's why they love working with me. But what I love is to see them win. That gives me a lot of gratitude.
For sure. And how involved are your kids? How much do they know about what's going on with the business and everything you and your husband are doing?
Well, I think my 8-year-old is probably the most well-versed on what it is. The other one is 2, so he'll be getting ready soon. Yeah. Not quite yet. And my oldest, he's into it, but he's really into building his gaming and YouTube. And, you know, that nice. Generation is different. You know, they are heavily relied on product and services through YouTube. So that's where he's finding his sweet spot. So, you know, I don't always understand it. I'm not going to lie. I'm like, what are you doing on there all day? But that's his direction. But see, I just want to be able to provide him a means, a foundation, so he can do what he does and he enjoys it. He doesn't have to stress about it. You know, so, but my 8-year-old, I feel like she might actually take over the business at some point. She's really well-versed on buying and selling. She knows terminology. She knows, you know, she goes to open house and walks events with me. And we just started her own business for t-shirts. So she's designing t-shirts. She's a published author. She did her first children's book. Right. Because we're not raising just employees. We're raising business owners. And so we got to level up. Right. So that's what I'm teaching her. She even has a book that's teaching her about the financial reports, but she doesn't realize she's learning it. It's called Money In and Money Out. That's what she's thinking, but she doesn't realize that it's teaching her how to do a P&L statement, a balance sheet. I know because I'm older, but she just thinks, okay, cool. I'm learning how the money comes in and how the money goes out. It's just those principles that we want to sprinkle in their lives so that when they're at a point to realize how to manage money, they're not just giving away the farm. They're not, you know, not knowing what to do and walking away with pennies, not realizing they're sitting on a gold mine. So it's the what are we doing for our kids? We're instilling those principles in them early. I'm hoping it will have a lasting value.
For sure. And how is your company currently structured? I know your husband is part of it and you have a team. Can you talk to us about how it's presently structured?
Yeah, well, my husband has a team, so he does more of the front end. So when I say that, it's more the investor specials. We do a lot of properties that need fixing up. So he takes care of it when it's in its ugly condition. That's his side of the game. And then I come in when it's been fixed up and you need a retail buyer and you need to get it off your books fairly fast. That's where I come in and help with the marketing and make sure the contracts are solid. So we have a good yin and yang in our setup, but we also have a team of 5 that we're showing how to also do this. So we have a leasing agent who handles leases. We have someone who's on our team that only does probates. We have someone else that's doing pre-foreclosures. So everybody has their niche. We're making our little Avenger team because everybody has their niche that they're focusing on and they're bringing in those leads into the business. So we love mentoring newer agents or people who are passionate about actually doing this for a living because it's not easy and it can be a lonely situation. You get lost really easy and overwhelmed really easy with all of the fees and resources and training and everything everybody says you have to have. What you really want to have is clarity on how to bring new business into your business every day. So we help our team do that.
For sure. And what has been the most rewarding part of being able to have a company with your husband?
Oh, well, that is interesting. We actually work good together because what he is strong at is different from my strengths. So we're not necessarily stepping on each other's toes. Now, it does take a bit of patience, you know, with any partnership to be around a person most of the day and then most of the time at home with the kids. So it does require some patience on both sides. But it's rewarding because we understand that we're building something bigger than ourselves. You know, when you keep that motivation of something bigger than just the money or bigger than just, you know, the transaction, it keeps you motivated. So we know what's at stake. We know what we have to do. We roll our sleeves up and do it every day. And it's rewarding when we can sit back and actually say, you know, share the experiences and share what we've gone through and who we've helped that day and the challenges we face. You know, it keeps us active and alive and engaged with each other. So it's good, but it's also, you know, it has its moments.
I'm sure.
So, right. But we get it and it works for us.
Definitely. Can you talk to us more about the Inglewood market? It's kind of, you know, all over the country, but especially in this area, everyone's eyes are on Inglewood, and it seems to be a lot going on. So can you just talk to us more about what you've seen from your perspective as far as the real estate side of things?
Yeah, you know, I've been a resident of Inglewood for majority of my life. Even when I didn't already reside in Inglewood, I was just maybe three main blocks away in South Los Angeles. So I have seen the evolution. I saw when my mom was around, when blacks weren't allowed to own in Inglewood. Then I came up and started growing up, and I saw how the gangs and the violence, and it started to become such a negative space for a lot of people that were either in the city or around the city that you didn't want to be in Inglewood. And now with the attraction of outside high net worth investors that saw the opportunity to build a stadium here and to build up the forum again, and they saw the location as in the proximity to the airport and the proximity to freeways and how such a sweet location it was, now it has brought a tremendous amount of activity and dollars and eyes to the city, to a very small city. And I don't even know if the residents here are really prepared for the tourism that is about to descend on them in the next year. But it is a complete evolution of the community. And it's good and it's bad, you know. You want to see people invest, but because it's happening at such a fast rate, I don't think the residents here quite understand all aspects of it. The development here is crazy. So they have a lot of apartments and mixed use, which are retail at the bottom and apartments on top. A lot of those are being approved through the city. You have the Clippers that are coming across from the new stadium. You have the casino that is now completely rebuilt. You have a whole entertainment area. You have single family homes that are being built. You have a full hotel that's now going to be built. You have opportunity zones that are right next to it. You have a new transit system that will be going through Inglewood. So it's happening at a very, very fast rate. And I'd say maybe 2 years ago, you could probably pick up a lot of fixers in Inglewood. Now it's probably all cash. Most people that have fixers are getting multiple offers from all cash investors because so much attention is now in this part of the city. And what they're going to do, they're going to fix it up and either sell it or wait till the stadium opens and do short-term rentals. Because you have people that will be coming in for games and events, concerts and whatnot. So it's going to completely change the infrastructure of the whole community and the people that's involved. I mean, you can even see it now if you come on Market Street. The businesses have changed. They're no longer just hair supplies or swap meet on Market. Now it's legitimate bistros and coffee shops and, you know, places where people who are more diverse in their background are now coming to hang out on Market. So the gentrification is real. It's an economic issue. Is that they're going to eventually price a lot of the people that are in the community, they're going to get priced out because people outside the community are able to afford a nicely renovated home where people in the community may not have those means. So you get to see an interesting evolution occur in our city, and I just hope that it's for the best. I hope at the end of the day that Inglewood is thriving from all this attention, but it's up to us as community members to get involved. Go to events, find out what's coming up. I mean, I was just amazed at they're building brand new townhomes on Prairie, which is, I went to St. Mary's for my high school. So it's literally across the street from my high school where Daniel Freeman Hospital was at. And they're starting at $800,000. I was like, what? In Inglewood? But yeah, that's the direction that it's going in because it's walking distance from a whole entertainment stadium. And the Sophie Stadium is going to be something really big because it's such a small city. It's going to be a big deal for our little city. So those are the type of things you want to pay attention to because what you realize is that if those properties are going for $800,000, it increases the land value. So what do you think the single family homes that sit behind it will be going for? Right? So if you're a homeowner back there, you're going to wait for them to build that, and then you put your money, your place on the market. Now you have a significant amount of equity to move forward with, whether to stay in the community or move out. Is you have options at that point. You know, if you're an investor and you see a fixer in those homes behind that stadium or behind those new townhomes, invest, consider it, because you see how much equity you will have within a year. It will triple, you know, the amount of equity you would have gotten under any other terms or circumstances. So it's those opportunities you want to be involved, stay involved, get in the community, see what's going on. Don't let them have this evolution while you're just kind of sitting there and watching it happen. You know, get involved.
For sure, for sure. And you also have a women in real estate group, is that right?
I do. So it's LA Wire, Los Angeles Women in Real Estate. And we meet, we have webinars, we have local events. We get together just for lunch to talk about what we're doing in our business, how we can support one another, and how we can continue to build wealth in real estate. It really started out of a lack. I'd go to events and I'd be the only woman there. And I'd be like, oh my gosh. You know, I go to 3-day events with older Caucasian men, and they're just getting this information and soaking it up like a sponge. And I'm looking around the room like, why aren't we learning this? Why aren't we teaching our kids this? Why are we not, you know, where are the moms at so we can do this while we're at home? We can be on the internet and find leads while we're sitting at home watching the kids. You know, even just basic stuff for young professionals that are coming out of college that can't find employment. We should be teaching them the principles that these other cultures are learning and applying daily in their business. We can do the exact same thing. So it was from that frustration and lack of representation, especially in commercial. There's a significant lack of representation for minority women in commercial real estate. That's where it all started for the LA Wire. And so I wanted to show them that it takes simple techniques of just being systematic with your approach and with your strategy, that you can build these wealthy portfolios and walk into a room with millions behind you. And they think you're just the young girl in the back. You know, they don't realize that you're sitting on $50 million worth of real estate. Who knew, right? Yeah. So, but it's because you applied a strategy and you did it over and over and over until you built quite an impressive portfolio. And that's what I really is my ultimate goal for my women in real estate attendees, is that they're able to apply these very simple strategies to build wealthy portfolios. And that's what we talk about on a monthly and weekly basis.
For sure. And what I like about that is, you know, you saw a need, you saw something that was missing, and you didn't, you know, kind of, you know, you used the way you felt about it to provide a solution. And I'm sure it's impacting so many women. How can, if a woman is interested in being part of that, how can they join?
Well, they can definitely send an email, but they can also go on to Facebook and look up Los Angeles Women in Real Estate, LA Wire. The LA Wire Club, and we have a group on there, we have a page on there, and then from that, I only open the window for enrollment 2 times a year, and this year will probably be in February, and then again in either June or July, and so I open those windows because it is a safe space for us to learn and grow together. So as someone that takes the program seriously, it's an application base, so we have to make sure we're aligned in the goals. But once you're in, you see a wealth of information and women to work with. And it's just a real safe space for you to learn and grow and ask all the questions you want to ask. So my email, I can share that with you or share it with your listeners. It's lstubbs@westcityinc.com. That's LSTUBBS at westcityinc. That's WESITY.INC.com. And our business line is 866-400-8838. So either way, if you want to connect with me through social media, phone, email, I can get you into the application process and we can see if it's a good fit.
For sure. And are there any other social media handles or anything that our listeners could reach out to you on if they like to just connect more?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram under LStubbs Broker, And then I'm on LinkedIn under LA Real Estate.
Perfect. My last question, what does the future look like for you, for West City? What are some goals you have in mind for this year and beyond?
This year, we're getting into more multifamily. So we have a few apartment buildings, small apartment buildings, but we have quite a few single family. And so our goal is to increase those units, increase the doors, but more so just to continue to build our team so that it allows us some more freedom of our time. Like, because we're so busy, we realize that we don't leave ourselves much time to enjoy the things that we're growing and doing in our business. And so we want to have a lot more opportunities to celebrate one another, celebrate our business, celebrate our team. And so we're trying to create that this year to just show a lot more appreciation for what we're doing and the people we're in business with. But more so, it's just for us to continue to grow, you know, in knowledge and brand and our awareness in our community, get us out there more, that people realize there are good people with intentions to help others grow. And that does exist.
Definitely. Wow. This has been a great interview. I really enjoy just hearing about your journey from the beginning to where you are now, and how you've bounced back and just grown your business in so many different areas. And also in the process are helping people to do the same. So I know our listeners will gain great value from this interview. So I really appreciate you taking the time to talk today.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I love to leave you with is a seller's to-do list and a buyer's to-do list, because we do this every day. I recognize that. So we know this process inside and out, but people don't sell and buy every day. Ordinary, you know, you're going to work. You're not necessarily buying and selling every day. So we share a quick little simple checklist that breaks it down from step one to about step 12. Of everything that you need to be, the main points that you need to be concerned with when you're buying and when you're selling. So I'm happy to send that to you so you can share, or they're happy if they contact me, they can get a copy. But that's my giveaway to anybody that's ready to get going and you want to understand the process more. You know, check out that checklist. It should simplify it for you.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
For sure. It was a pleasure. Pleasure having you on. I'm glad we finally got to coordinate our schedules and get on.
Right, yeah.
Sure. Well, everyone, thank you so much for listening to the Black Real Estate Dialogue. You can find us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue or Twitter at Bread Podcast. Look forward to talking to you all soon.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.